Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I am your host, Jimmy Traina. Thanks so much for tuning in. Got Troy Aikman from Fox Sports on the podcast today. Great conversation with Troy about a bunch of NFL topics. So I think you guys will enjoy that. Before we get to Troy, let me just give you a little plug here for past podcasts in case you missed it over the holidays. Last week, we had Andrew Marchand from the New York Post to discuss a variety of sports media news, and Armin Katayan, who is an executive producer on the Tiger Woods documentary on HBO. Two-part docuseries. Part one aired last Sunday, the 10th. Part two airs this Sunday, the 17th. So if you haven't checked it out, listen to Armin, and then you can get into the Tiger docuseries on HBO. And then make sure you check out the year-end roundtable two-part edition I did with Peter Schrager and Andrew Perloff over the holidays, where we did a roundtable review of sports media and pop culture for 2020. All right, that's what we got going in previous episodes. This episode, I said, is Troy Aikman, and we get to it right now. All right, joining me now, second time for me on the SI Media podcast, lead Fox NFL analyst, has the very, very good Bucs Saints game this Sunday, 6:40 on Fox, Troy Aikman. Troy, how's it going?
Good, good. Thank you for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. It's funny. The last time you were on was September of 2019, and a big storyline that season were the refs. They were having a hard time. I think that was that the first year they put in the challenge for the pass interference. I don't know. Everything was a mess that year. Yeah. And you said some things, and it really took off. And you did the game that Thursday, and you said, I did a podcast this week, and it was very exciting, but you didn't say SI podcast or Sports Illustrated podcast. So if you mention this appearance this week, just get in the plug for SI, because it's all about the branding here, you know.
Well, I'll get it in, and we got a much bigger audience this week, so that'll be, you'll glad you waited.
I was surprised how many people hit me up when you just said I did a podcast, because I think Joe played all, Joe's been on this podcast, you know, a million times, so he played off it. It was funny. You got to be excited. It's funny. I thought about it. Your season started with Bucs Saints.
Yeah.
And now you got it Sunday. I know you played 12 seasons. How old were you when you retired?
I was 34.
34. So you must marvel at these two quarterbacks.
I mean, the game's a little different, obviously. I think we're going to see a lot of quarterbacks playing until their early 40s. But the impressive thing for me watching them is how at the level they're playing at right now. I think that's the thing that's most impressive. I've been really pleased to see Tom, because I know last year was not a great year for him in New England, and a lot of people questioning whether or not he still had it. And then he goes to Tampa, where they've got a really good supporting cast, and he's playing some of his best football. And of course, Drew's been doing that throughout his entire career. So this is exciting. These two quarterbacks, actually, Jimmy, are the two guys who, when I do talk about how the game has changed in terms of protection for the quarterbacks, these guys both came into the league when they weren't afforded that kind of protection. So they have a good perspective on how the game has changed from where it once was.
You're not that far removed from them. Do you put any stock in just the players today? And it's across all sports, just better conditioning, work, the whole different workout, the supplements, this, that, taking care of their bodies. I don't know the intensity of like when you played, but obviously, I mean, Tom has his whole, I mean, he's got a whole side gig going with it. How much stock do you put in that for their longevity?
A lot. And not just for them. I think for all players. I think the training in the off season, most of these guys have their own trainers now. And I think they're much more diligent at earlier ages. I think all of us, the former players, from other generations, I think they got into nutrition later in their careers when they started looking at longevity and how to prolong their careers. But I think players are much more educated when they come into the league in their early 20s.
Right.
And I think they take better care of themselves. And I think, quite honestly, for me, some of the things I'm doing now at my age, I wish I were doing when I was playing. I think it would have furthered my career as well. But Tom's been on the forefront of that, and I think he's really inspired a lot of quarterbacks and a lot of other players to really look after their health.
Were you not a big nutrition guy when you played?
Well, I wasn't for the early part of my career. I think back to, you know, it was it was pizza two nights a week during the season. And then I had a Chinese food night. I mean, it was the same each week. I mean, I was consistent, but it just wasn't. And then in 94, the 94 season, we lost to San Francisco in the championship game. And that's when I decided I was really going to do everything I could in my power to be in the best shape possible. And began running an awful lot. I still run to this day, and watching what I was eating, dropped probably 10, 15 pounds, and then played it that way throughout the rest of my career.
Yeah, Sunday should be a lot of fun. That's obviously the game of the week. A couple of things outside of that game I wanted to talk to you about. You know, I'm in New York, and you pissed a lot of people here off this week because you said Aaron Donald was the best defensive player you ever saw. And the Lawrence Taylor people came out of the woodwork and were not too kind to you. Anything on the Aaron Donald over Lawrence Taylor comment that you made?
Not too much. I mean, in no way, trust me. I mean, there's nobody, or not many, I should say, that hold Lawrence Taylor in higher regard than I do. I mean, I watched him when I was in high school and college, and then of course played against him. I mean, he was terrific and a transformative player. I think, it was really more of a compliment to Aaron Donald. And Reggie White being the same way, having faced him twice a year and in some big games, of course, when he was with the Packers. Those are great players. And I think it was just putting it into context as to how much I think of Aaron Donald. There's not a game – I don't know of any player other than Aaron Donald that when I put on any film – I mean, it could be any game. It could be week four of any regular season – and he jumps out and he's playing at levels that I've just not seen before. It's hard to put into perspective. And I thought that was the best way to do it. And I feel that was probably accomplished, but in no way was that meant to be at the expense of Reggie White or Lawrence Taylor.
Yeah. Sure. And the New York fans will totally accept that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's amazing. We've gotten to this point here, coming up on the divisional round, and we get the conference title and then the Super Bowl. You know, I'm the first one. If, you know, I got an issue with the NFL, luckily Sports Illustrated doesn't have any ties to the NFL, so I can, you know, say what I want, but I think they deserve a lot of credit for getting this season done. And they've done it really, I mean, outside of that one week where you had some issues with Washington and Pittsburgh, they ended up playing on like a Wednesday or something. They got the season in without a ton of issues. You know, if you compare it to like college football, which was just a complete disaster unequivocally from start to finish all season, were you surprised the NFL was able to get it all in without issues and played every game and we got to this point with, you know, everything rolling pretty well?
I was. Yeah, I think it's I credit the organizations the most, you know, more than the NFL. I think the NFL, they had a platform where they were going to do everything possible to get these games in. And I think for that to work, I think the organizations and specifically the players were going to have to take responsibility and then also show some flexibility. I think that, you know, so from that standpoint, yes, I am surprised. I really felt that we would have periods where we had to take a step back. Games would be canceled. We wouldn't be calling games for a week or two and then hit the reset button. Obviously that didn't happen. My concern, Jimmy, is that, in fact, I've seen where some players have commented on this, that they've said that they've proven that they can put an entertaining product on the field without practicing. Mm-hmm. And that concerns me, that we could move forward and not have much practice time, if any practice time, and then just go play football. I think the product will suffer. And it concerns me with what the long-term viability then is of our sport. I think to be good at anything, I think you have to practice. I think this year was an exception. There's some things that had to be done. The coaches really were the ones that, I don't know if suffered's the right way of saying it, but when you consider the fact that coaches were putting together game plans and going out and playing in games where at times teams hadn't even practiced during the week.
Right.
I personally don't know how you do that as someone who liked the process of practicing during the week prior to playing. But that does concern me if all of a sudden it's looked upon that, hey, you know what? Maybe we only need one day of practice before we have to go play a game. That'd be great, because as the owners have gotten more and more financial considerations in these negotiations, the players' fallback position has been, okay, well, then we'll give them less of our time. And I think at the end of the day, the owners are fine with that as long as people are tuning in and watching the games and the games are competitive. I just don't know that it's the best thing for our sport going forward.
Yeah. I mean, there's got to be a middle ground there, I would assume, where, you know, maybe it's a little less practice than in the past and more practice than this year. And, you know, it's interesting because, like, the Browns didn't practice last week and then they come out and hammer the Steelers and without their head coach as well. I mean, the NFL is such is a league where, you know, people think this that's just an impossible thing that can happen, and then it happened.
Yeah, I think a lot of things were maybe proven false, you know, but that's why I credit the players. I think to do that, that's not an easy thing to do. But I hopefully this year is the exception and we go back to the way things once were.
Did you like the added wild card games on Saturday and Sunday? Normally there's four games. There were six. They added some teams in. I know as a broadcaster, you don't worry about the ratings. The ratings are down big from a year ago, still better than anything on TV. And I think it was because of the added game and because of the current events, and cable news probably took a lot of viewers away from the NFL, I think, this past weekend. But taking that out of it, do you like the extra games?
Well, yes and no. I liked it as a fan. I liked it that I got a chance to watch an extra game. But I think that the way that the league has set up, I've never wanted to expand the playoffs. I didn't want that when I was a player. And I guess looking at it as to what I feel makes our sport more relevant, I like the exclusivity, if you will. I think that if it become if we start taking away from the importance of the regular season, I think that we're making a mistake. I think that's one of the attractions of football, is that not everybody does make the postseason, and it puts a premium on playing these games during the regular season and the importance of them. So I'd hate to see that change.
I also think you're asking a lot of fans to sit there from 1 to 11 or midnight, whatever, 2 days in a row on a weekend. You know, it's a
and
lot.
This year, Jimmy, you know, as we know, there were games every night of the week. And I don't know. It's easy to say, hey, it's still the best thing that's on television. And yeah, that's true. I don't know. I read a book, America's Game, years ago, and it talked about some of the missteps of baseball. Mm-hmm. That led to them being America's pastime, to then football overtaking it and as the most popular sport. And one of the primary reasons, according to this particular writer, was the oversaturation of the games and the overexposure of the games on television. And so I think there's probably some lessons in our history and in all fronts, and maybe that's one of them that we can learn from. And I don't know that that's a good thing.
Yeah, you know, everything this year seems weird. So it seemed appropriate for this year to do the extra game. Yep. Who knows what they do. Speaking of this year being weird, what has it been like for you calling those games with no fans in the stands?
It a little different. I mean, a little different at first. Now I probably, like the players, we're used to it, but it's different from the players in that in our headsets, we have crowd noise kind of pumped in. So what you're hearing at home is what we're hearing as well. And so you forget that there's no fans there. And then you take the headsets off and you hear how quiet it is. And you think, gosh, this is what these players are. So, again, I think it's a tribute to these players being able to go out and compete at the level that they're able to, because the fans are a big part of that. They're a big part of the energy that comes that these players feed off of. But the good thing for us was there's no traffic getting to the stadiums. There's no hassles getting in and out of the booth.
Right.
Nobody's hollering, Aikman, you suck. And hey, Cowboys. And all, you know, I'm not hearing any of that. So there's always a silver lining in there somewhere.
That's funny. Speaking of the Cowboys, since you mentioned it, I mean, well, let me ask you this. You may have said this in the past. I'm not sure. Is your goal to one day be in a front office? Is that what you want?
I don't know about goal. Yeah. I think if it were something that I was really adamant about attempting, that I believe I could reach out to half a dozen clubs and get a role of some kind and learn and then be in a position to where I could fulfill whatever aspirations that I might have. I have a great job, Jimmy. I mean, I really do love my job. A lot of people say that. I mean, I say it and really do believe it. It's great. And well,
I mean, I know you can't say it, but you've also become the top analyst right there with, you know, with Tony and Chris and, you know, it's sort of, you know, you've reached that status. So I would imagine that sort of makes it hard to leave that gig as well eventually.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, there was a time where I was struggling to really find my satisfaction in this profession, because when you're used to playing and there not being a scoreboard, it becomes really difficult. But that's not been the case for quite some time. I find the job enjoyable, but I also find it satisfying for me as someone who, you know, is goal oriented and tries to, you know, have achievements in life. And so that part of it's been great, but I do think that, and it could very well happen, but I do think that if I'm much older and I look back on my life and I never was given the opportunity or took a shot at being in the front office, I think I'd say, yeah, you know what? I'll always kind of wonder just, you know, how I would have been. I believe I'll be good if I do it.
Yeah.
But without doing it, you just never can confirm that.
I'm going to say something, but you don't have to react. I don't want to put you on the spot. It probably also makes it harder to ever leave your job when you see what Tony got paid. And then when your contract comes up, you could say to Fox, hey, here's Tony's contract. What are we going to do?
Well, there's no question, Jimmy, that the broadcasting salary cap went up here in the past year. You know, there was no work stoppage and the cap went up. So I think a lot of people in this profession took notice.
Yeah. You and Joe have been doing this together a very long time. And you have such years. 19 years, and you guys have such a great rapport and everything. But I have to say, one of the things I admire about you, and I wish more people did, is you do it fairly. You don't do it in any way that is unfair. You don't hesitate to criticize the players, which, yeah, I think for new guys who get in the booth, they're probably nervous about it. They know most of the players. Is it because you've been out of the game so long and now you don't have the relationships you may have had when you had first joined the booth? Or is it just, you know, you're just trying to do your job the best that you can? Because that's always dicey when an ex-player is criticizing the player.
I think it's a little bit of both. Jimmy, I remember the very first press conference I did when it was announced that I was going into this profession, and I was asked whether or not I could be critical of the players. And it really, it took me back a little bit, because I said, I don't know that my job is by description to be critical. I think my job is to be fair and accurate and honest. And if you're asking me if I can be those things, the answer is yes. And so I do believe that when you first leave the playing field and you're in the booth, that you do have, you know, much closer relationships, and it's a little bit harder, I think, to be objective. And then as you get further away from it, I still have a lot of great relationships in the game. I mean, these players, you know, I see them regularly. I talk to them all, especially the quarterbacks, the coaches, and the star players, if you will. So it's not that you don't have those relationships anymore, but I'm glad you said that you feel that I'm fair. I don't have an agenda when I go into the booth. I try to call the game as I see it. And if there's a play that's poor, I try to point that out. But I never want to do it really at the expense of anyone. I just try to be fair in my critique. I'd like to be fair when things aren't going well, so that then when I say, hey, this is really a great play, or this player is exceptional, or what, that people know that I'm not just saying it to say it. You know, I want the words that I say to mean something. And I think that's only true if you're really honest with how you feel.
Have you thought about that night when it happened? Did you think about if you were doing that Washington Philly game, how you would have handled the Eagles tanking basically right out in the open? Would you have? I mean, Chris Collinsworth, it felt like it took him and Al a little while to get going, and then they dropped the hammer. Like when you're watching that as an announcer, you're like, wow, I would say this, or what you would say. Are you playing that in your head?
Yeah, no question. Whether it's that situation or even after a play that happens in a game, I think you try to think of, you know, what you would have been seeing at that time or what you might have said. I thought Chris and Al actually, I thought they handled it pretty well. It becomes a fine line. I think that for instance, for Doug Peterson in Philadelphia, Doug Peterson's job is to be the best head coach for the Philadelphia Eagles that he could possibly be. And if that meant going with another quarterback in the fourth quarter because he felt that he needed to evaluate that guy or whatever his reasons are, that's totally up to him. The Pittsburgh Steelers, they rested players as well, and there were playoff implications on the line in that game. But this one felt a lot different, and I agree with that. It just didn't feel right. And so for those people that were upset, the Giants being one of them, I understand that. And I know that in the past, Roger Goodell has not wanted teams to rest players. He does not want to compromise the integrity of our game. But yet, I don't think that you'll ever be able to remove the self-interest that organizations have as far as what they need to do. And that's what Doug felt that he needed to do. So I would have brought it up and said, hey, this doesn't feel right, like Chris and Al did. But at the end of the day, recognize that the Eagles have the ability to do whatever they see fit.
Also, I mean, I'm coming at this perspective from the fan, so I'm curious for your take as a player and a Hall of Fame player and a commentator. The draft seems like such a crapshoot outside of maybe like, listen, Trevor Lawrence, number one, you know what's going to happen. Everyone expects him to be a franchise quarterback. But the difference in where the Eagles would be drafting based on losing that game, I mean, the Eagles took, I forgot the guy's name already, I can't believe it, but they took a receiver who didn't do much this year ahead of Justin Jefferson, for instance, last year.
Yeah, Rager.
I mean, that should show you right there that you're fooling around with draft position. It's not, unless you're getting the first pick and the guy's going to be, you know, an all timer, it's just seems, you know, not worth the headache that ends. Well, he ended up losing his job, but
yeah,
you know.
No, that's what I was going to say at the end of the day. And I don't know how much that factored into it. I would imagine, Jeffrey Lurie wasn't overly excited about it, but I can't confirm that. Maybe those things were talked about prior to the game.
Yeah. I know you got to go. Let's go back to where we started with Saints Bucks. Let me ask you, let's start with this. Does Tom Brady have a very good chance of winning a Super Bowl this year?
Yeah, I think he does. You know, I mean, they all have a chance now that those teams that are left in it, right, of the eight teams, but the defense is good. These two teams, I think when you look at the Saints and the Bucks on paper, it's probably as evenly matched a game as you could ever look to, on the offensive side of the ball and the defensive side of the ball, the things they do well, the things, you know, that they may not do necessarily all that well. And then like the other two games, it's going to come down to who can execute. But yeah, this is, you know, the road of having to play on the road in the postseason isn't nearly, not even close, nearly as daunting as what it has been in years past. So for this game to be played in New Orleans, that doesn't mean much compared to what it would have in previous seasons.
Yeah, you read my mind. That was my next. So we saw during the regular season where home road really didn't matter that much without the fans in the stands, I guess. And now I was going to ask if that's even bigger in the playoffs because, you know, I guess your road teams coming into a playoff game are going to be so focused, and with no fans there, it's such a huge advantage for the road team. So that's still a factor, I think, in the postseason this year, correct?
So you think it's a factor for
that road teams are helped so much in the postseason, even more postseason than regular season.
Yeah, I think the Rams going to Green Bay, that's a home field advantage for Green Bay because of the conditions. But they're not having to deal with the 12th man and the crowd and how that affects communication at the line. So there's other than the weather of Green Bay or the northern cities, I don't see much of an advantage. The Cowboys would have had one had they been able to get in, just because their stadium's half full. But
right.
Some places are allowing some fans, but not to the extent that it's going to affect much on the field with communication.
I just remember what I wanted to ask you about Brady. It was even going back a little bit, because you talked about, you know, last year New England wasn't a great year for Tom. And then obviously this year, especially the second half of this year, he's been outstanding.
Yeah.
And there's always a thing with quarterbacks about, you know, how important are the weapons? So Tom had no weapons in New England at all last year. Now he's got a ton of weapons. We're seeing it now, even with a rookie, well, second year, I guess, with Tua. A lot of people are saying Tua had no weapons, and that's why people are down on him. And it's not too, as a quarterback, where do you stand on how important the weapons are?
Well, you got to have them. I mean, it doesn't do you any good to have a Tom Brady if you don't have guys that can get open and he can get the ball to. I think for someone like Tom, and even for Drew, when you're talking about guys that are into their 40s, it's even more important to have the right kinds of players that can create separation early, especially for guys that aren't very mobile. That becomes paramount. But I think more and more personnel people have understood it, because the game's become more offensive. And so with that, there's been more resources on the offensive side of the ball. And so more and more teams have that. Now, I say that Green Bay, of course, with Aaron Rodgers, it really speaks a lot to Matt LaFleur as the play caller and the coordinator. And then of course, Aaron Rodgers, that, you know, they don't have, when you compare their supporting cast up against some of the others, not taking anything away, they got Davante Adams, and so they got some good running backs in that. But relatively speaking, don't have some of the skill players that some of these other teams do, but yet they're moving the football very effectively and doing a lot of really great things. And I think it's because of those two guys mostly. But it's really critical.
I'm going to end on a totally light note that has nothing to do with football. You mentioned Rodgers. And he revealed yesterday he's going to guest host Jeopardy soon. Would you want to do that for a week? Would you want to do that job?
Yeah, probably not.
Is there a game show Troy Aikman would like to host for a week?
Nothing comes to mind offhand. Aaron's been on Jeopardy. He won Celebrity Jeopardy. And so maybe had I have been on it, I'd have felt a little bit differently. But I kind of like, you know, they always say stay in your lane. I kind of like my lane, you know, yeah. Jimmy. I try to stay in it. And not to say that over the years I've been asked to do cameos in Jerry Maguire and different things. Right. And I've done a country and Western album. It's awful. I don't even know that they call it country and Western anymore. It's a country album, I should say.
What year did you do that? Were you playing, or was it after your playing days?
No, it was when I was playing.
I got to go on YouTube and look that up.
Please don't. I did one after our first Super Bowl. A bunch of us Cowboys, Novacek and Joe Avezzano, our special teams coach, and some other people did it. Randy White, and then in the late '90s, towards the end of my career, I did a song with Waylon Jennings, and did another one with Toby Keith. So not that I ever aspired to be a singer. I can't sing at all. But, you know, just some opportunities that come up and you say, dude, you never know when these things might come up again, and you do them. But hosting a game show. Now, my partner, Joe Buck, game for that.
I was going to say two things. One, I want you back on this podcast, but I'm tempted to look up that album, so I'm torn right now. I got to figure out what I'm going to do. But I was going to say, I think your partner would be very good as a Jeopardy host for one of those guest spots.
Yeah, shoot. I think I don't know if they've named whoever's going to be.
They haven't. They're just trying out people. That's why Aaron's going to get a week. Katie Couric's getting a week.
Yeah, I think Joe would be, I think he'd be terrific.
He would. All right. I appreciate you doing this, and have fun in New Orleans. Is that like a bummer now when you go into a city like New Orleans and you can't really do anything because of COVID? It's like, I mean, listen, everyone's suffering. I'm not trying to make it like this is a hardship for you, but it's like you're in New Orleans. There's probably a million restaurants you love there and all that. And then you get in and can't do anything.
It's a really good point, Jimmy. The season's gone well for us. And like you said, to start off, we've been able to get through it. And a lot of people have allowed that to happen. But I think for our jobs, a lot like the rest of the country, that a lot of the fun that we get in doing these games is the time that we get to spend together, you know, with our team and with our crew. And we really don't get to do that. We don't see each other much outside of, you know, our workplace. And that's been the hard part for us, just like it has been for all Americans.
Yeah. All right, well, enjoy it. Bucks Saints, 6:40 Sunday, Fox. And then you have the NFC title game. CBS has a Super Bowl this year. Do you get it next year, the Super Bowl?
NBC next year. And then, I think we've got it the following year in Phoenix.
Nice. All right. Thanks, Troy. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Jimmy. Appreciate
Take care.
You.
Okay. Bye-bye. All right. My thanks to Troy Aikman for coming on the podcast. Always enjoy talking to Troy. And like I said, to Troy and I, we talked about this with Chris Russo a few weeks ago. Troy's the best analyst right there with Tony Romo these days. There's no question about it. Troy has become unbelievably great at his lead announcing gig. So I appreciate him coming on. Past episodes last week, Andrew Marchand, SI Media Podcast regular, and Armin Katayan, who worked on the Tiger Woods documentary that's on HBO, two-parter. We're in the middle of it now, so check that out. Year-end roundtable with Peter Schrager and Andrew Perloff over the holidays, two parts, so check those out. And most importantly, please subscribe to the SI Media Podcast. All right, that wraps it up. Again, thanks to Troy Aikman, and we'll see you next week right here on the SI Media Podcast. Stay safe and take care.